Yeah, just tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay. Well, my name is Robin Horton. I'm now a 58-year-old fellow, granddad, and I kind of got into aviation when just before I was done graduating from BYU.
So you worked for Boston Center?
Yeah, and then they hired me. So I came from my aviation career. That qualified me to be accepted into the FAA, and then we just had to go through the rigorous training to either make it or break it. And my destination indeed was the Boston Center. Not selected by me because I didn't know at that time, but that's kind of where I ended up, and that's in Nashua, New Hampshire. I moved to Nashua, New Hampshire with my young family after flying down at the Cape Islands. In any event, I ended up being engaged in the system itself, and I spent over three of my final 11 years engaged in procedures and other levels of management.
So you have a good grasp of the whole air traffic control system.
Yeah, I have a good grasp of the whole thing. The other, the last two of radar data available that are pertinent to all of 9/11 are that it's just simply raw radar. There is simply radar data that is dumped into the computer that is represented and remembered and available that just simply knows, that simply records what targets they see, squawking what codes or what primary targets they see on every single sweep that the radar has.
Right.
And so that is not actually raw radar data. It comes from the raw radar, but it's actually digitized.
Right.
And it's put into the computer, and then it can be extracted. The third element involved in the information available within the air traffic system, and that is that there's a separate system of information that is collected, and that is the radar data processing, where they have track data, because tracks are computer-generated alphanumeric blocks of information that are then attached to the targets. So there's three things. There's communication, there's the raw radar data, there's a flight plan, and then there's actually tracking data. So what bits of information that are available.
Okay.
And go ahead with your question.
Yeah, as far as September 11th, how does that tie in to what happened that day and how our system reacted once
found
out?
On September 11th, I'm one of the few people who within really quite a few hours of the whole event taking place just simply knew that it was an inside job, and it wasn't because, okay, of, you know, the visuals, the collapses, whatever, okay? I knew that it was an inside job, I think within about 4 or 5 o'clock that afternoon, and the reason that I knew is because when those aircraft collide, and then we got the news information somewhere along the line, and they could kind of roughly say where the aircraft went. I said, well, okay, wait a minute. Now, if they knew where the aircraft were and they were talking to them at a certain time, that then normal protocol is to get fighter jet aircraft up to assist, okay? And I knew the edginess of the system at that time, who were always ready at that time. So I presumed that they were still fairly ready.
Okay.
And
you still know people that are working there that have pretty much said the same thing, right?
Yeah, people there who confirmed to me that the FAA was not asleep, and that the controllers and the control staff was not asleep. They did the job. They followed their own protocols and actually, I think, created a few of their own in the emergency situation. So the bottom line is that the only way that those airliners could not have been intercepted is if there had been a major system failure, meaning electrical telecommunications, a backhoe had just dug up all of the cables, and nobody could talk to anybody, whatever, which is a huge coincidence if it would happen.
But that didn't actually happen. It was more mass confusion.
So as soon as I saw the information that the FAA or somebody had provided to the public, I said, well, that's enough information for me to know that all of the systems in the centers were working well. And so I said, all right, so therefore, there is no way, okay, that American 11 went 95, 93, and then 77. There's just no way they would have been able to be successful at their mission if there were any type of standard, if all of the equipment were available.
Right.
It just, it was out
so obviously that day it was... There must have been things in place, such as the war games and everything else, that
was
non-standard.
Yeah, I did not know at that time what was in place.
Right.
What I did know was that it was abnormal.
Right.
Okay, and it took some time before we found out some information. Actually, it took a year or two before I found out about the key element in that entire day, is that there has been some emergency aircraft handling protocol change, okay, I remember what emergency protocol was, and I also remember what hijacking protocol was, and they were two very different things, and, so, these guys, after the event, have always been looking at hijacking protocol. My experience, I've had a save, and I've had other situations where I've handled hijackers go through my area. So I handled both protocols personally and knew that something was very wrong, and that the first line of duty of an air traffic controller is to continually observe the well-being and positioning and success of all of the flights that are going through their sectors. That's what we do. We do that 100% of the time.
Right. And you've handled hijacked aircraft before, correct?
I have handled hijacked aircraft before. They were hijacked before they got to my sector, and I have handled emergency aircraft that we declared as being emergency aircraft in my sector.
Right.
Okay? So I've handled the whole scope of events, and I know what basically goes on. And as far as American 11, what bothers me is that I know that believe that the controllers handling American 11 just knew something was seriously wrong as soon as it stopped responding, and then bang, it lost its primary target, and then it's on another routing. You know, you absolutely know, okay, that there is significant and serious trouble going on that flight right at that moment. One of the things that most of the people don't understand is how much air traffic controllers know. You know, the aircraft is just way off course. It's not rocket science. It's unbelievably simple. You sit there and you see things go wrong, then you start to take action.
Right.
And so the protocol on American 11 is not a hijacker, because that didn't really occur as being a hijacker until somebody heard some possible voices or whatever. Well, before that time, American 11 was really in significant trouble. And the emergency aircraft protocol that air traffic controllers have, okay, calls for taking immediate actions to deal with the situation. And you, what you do is you don't wait for the judge, jury, and executioner to prove it's emergency. If things start to go wrong, you have the authority to simply say, okay, I am going to treat this craft as though it is an emergency.
Right.
Because if everybody is wrong 15 minutes later, no big thing.
Yeah, and
no,
that's
trouble.
The same way anywhere in aviation. That's the same thing with pilots as well.
Absolutely, I know, of course. Yeah.
Now, once they have realized that American 11 was a hijack, what happens then?
I think there's another set of protocols that go on, but before that, I don't want to talk about when they discover or decide, or somebody decides to hijack, because number one, you want to tell me exactly what it is, the evidence that you need that will prove that it's a hijack? The only way that you can get absolute proof that it's a hijack is for the captain of the airplane or some replacement to say this aircraft is hijacked.
Right.
Short of that, what you do is you just collect some evidence. That's irrelevant. The FAA, NORAD, government, okay, the what I call the high perps, the people who perpetrated this whole thing at high levels, the high perps, what they want us to focus on is hijack issues.
Right.
That's not what I focus on. air traffic controller is responding to the emergency condition of that aircraft well before he even thinks of it as being a hijack, because they deal with aircraft in emergencies like this, not all the time, but often enough to understand that there needs to be another protocol. And you boom, 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 you try to get contact, you try to company, you try other aircraft in the area, you check stuff out. And as the testimony in front of the 9/11 Commission admits, okay, NORAD admits that they saw when American 11 lost its transponder. Now, they don't jump out and do, they aren't provoked to do. My position is that this controller at the center followed the emergency aircraft protocol and started to reach out beforehand, and those are the communications and the tapes that have not been made available. The only focus has been on the hijack protocol, okay, that is written down, and the hijack protocol is something that takes place after somewhere along the line. It might even be like over the North Atlantic, that some transatlantic flight has been hijacked, and all of a sudden we get the information, and that protocol is put into place. So it's a more, you know, it's a different protocol after an emergency.
Right.
What the controller was seeing in the Boston Center had very little to do with hijack at that point, but it had everything to do with a jet airliner in significant electronic trouble. And when a jet airliner, modern jet airliners, is in electronic trouble and it's steering all over the sky and no responses, you assume a massive electrical failure and you assume that the aircraft is having difficulty controlling itself.
But once they have pretty much determined that it's been a hijack, what's the protocol at that point?
The protocol at that time, to make sure that the military are involved first. Let's just call the military either Rummy's military or the Pentagon.
Right.
What that means is that the Pentagon is alerted and they say, okay, we acknowledge that it's been confirmed as a hijacker. We want to monitor and follow that thing. And what we will do is we will, if necessary, put up a fighter on its tail.
When the hijack protocol is put into motion, basically, what happens then as far as all the other system, all the other centers in the system?
As soon as notification is given, as soon as this is given, discovered to be, or decided to be that it was a hijacker, okay, what happens now in the protocol is that all sorts of people are informed about the situation. Just say, Rummy's military, okay, and civilian FAA, and it goes right down to Herndon, and then the information is spread really all over the system.
So the whole system is notified.
The whole system, and this has been admitted to the fact, I mean, Cleveland knew, Indianapolis knew, New York knew, everybody knew, as soon as American 11 was declared a hijack. That's what we do.
Right, and then after 175 hit, of course, the whole world knew that the United States was under attack, and by that time, centers would definitely know that.
My position is that as soon as that the controllers at the New York Center were controlling American 175, okay, indeed were already informed through the system, okay, that hijackings had been recorded and the system needed to be put on alert. Now, I want to remind people that that there hadn't been an act of hijacking in, a decade or something like that. So, let me just tell you, even if they had walkie-talkies in the men's rooms, okay, of all the air traffic facilities across this country, if this unusual and highly volatile event had occurred, there were enough experienced controllers to just spread this word like, couldn't believe this information. That's like, unbelievable. Did you hear this? And bang, it's across the system, and it was formally across the system, and it was acknowledged by the terrible tapes, or the insufficient tape and testimony that was presented to the 9/11 Commission, that indeed the system was alerted. So everybody knew.
Everybody knows.
The system knew. Hello. was because of the hijacking protocol that was now into place, and this is what happened. You get these hijackers, you get these circumstances that you're not particularly familiar with, you break out your books. When you break out your books,
you follow
and you start to read
it, follow the
check,
book.
check, and then all of a sudden, and what that means is that the system now had to make some phone calls into, let's call it Rummy's Pentagon. And Rummy's Pentagon is the one that would then make the decision. Well, Rummy's Pentagon on American 11 didn't answer the phone. 90175 didn't answer the phone. I maintain they didn't answer the phone until they absolutely were embarrassed into answering the phone somewhere along the flight of United 93 and American 77. Then,
right.
Orwell, first formal contact was at this particular time. That is all distractionary. Okay? That is all designed to keep people off the focus. The real focus is what the air traffic controller did immediately upon seeing that American 11 was in trouble, and what we do as air traffic controllers is we get eyes and ears on this flight. We reach out and we hit the buttons, the communications buttons between NORAD, which I will call ADC, Air Defense Command. Okay, and we start to point out the targets, and we say, what do you see? They admitted that they saw American 11 lose its transponder. They knew it. They saw it.
Right.
That's what they do. They monitor. So my feeling is this. If the air traffic controller were going by emergency procedures, which is trained to do, it would have reached out directly, okay, to ADC and somebody and say, what do you see? I got a high-speed target. He's at the last reported at this altitude. He's northwest. He's X number of miles northeast of Albany, north of Keene, whatever it might be, heading
southwest
in
Dulles
direction. Okay? And what do you see out there? So he would have reached out to ADC to get them in.
And what is ADC?
Air Defense Command.
Right. Those,
when I say ADC, I'm talking about the actual controllers who are sitting at the scopes in what is commonly known as NEEDS. Right now, or
Northeast
within the general
defense.
NORAD system, okay?
Right.
And so these are the controllers. Let's call them sector controllers, the same way that the guy working American 11 was called a sector controller.
Right.
Because when you push a button from your sector and you connect to Air Defense Command, you are connecting to the controller within, or the observer within NORAD, who has jurisdiction on that airspace. You push the button, you are not talking to Denver. You're talking to the guy who is responsible for X number square miles up in the northeast quadrant of the
right.
United States of America.
Let's fit this into American 77 and the lack of response. Based on what we knew at that time at 5 minutes, 8 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock that morning, after American 11 and 175 has already hit the north and the south tower, and American 77 is still a half an hour away from Washington, D.C., and supposedly hijacked. Indianapolis Center is trying to contact them. They contact Langley at 9:08 and let them know that American 77 is missing at that time. Now, Indianapolis Center at that time should have already been notified of American 11 and United 175. Is that correct?
As soon as American 11 was considered to be hijacked, the entire FAA system, coast to coast, all facilities, okay, en route centers, okay, approach TRACONs and towers would be normally all informed. Everybody, the flight service stations, everybody would receive a general notice, okay? Everybody gets information on what would be considered, what used to be considered a teletype, but now is probably just, you know, email type messages, whatever.
Right. So by the time American 77 had turned off their transponder and
this is so way after the fact.
Yeah.
This is so way after the fact. Let me just break that down about this information. Once the Boston Center plugged into the national down to Herndon and got the information out, Herndon's going to generate a transmission to all facilities across, you know, coast to coast. Now, in all facilities coast to coast, especially in the major facilities, there are people who are sitting there, right there. It is their job to keep track of the national airspace system is what's going on. So in this hot potato, comes across their teletype or comes onto their email message, okay, they have protocol, they have procedures. They are to take that information and immediately dispense it to the supervisors covering all of the sectors and all of the airspace in there. Then when these on-floor, these, you know, let's call them on-duty or active supervisors who are right beside the controllers themselves, they're mixed right in. We see that on TV. We see that all over the place. They go right to their sectors. They go right to the controllers right at the sectors, and they say, okay, here's an national update. We just got information that the hijackings occurred up in Boston Center. And, okay, so just give me any information that you get if you see anything unusual. I'm going to
tell you. So when Indianapolis Center saw this something unusual of American 77 turning around, that should automatically raise some red flags.
They already do. Trying to explain. They've already just down to American 11. Let's say at 8, arbitrarily, 8:30, whatever, just make it arbitrary thing. Somebody there said, okay, this is a hijacking. At that point, that other hijacking protocol kicks into place. That calls for the national FAA system to be notified.
Correct.
Now, let's say they notify 8:34, maybe 8:35. I'm going to tell you straight out. Every air traffic control and flight service station position in this country was probably notified by their supervisor. They don't mess around.
Right.
They get that information out to get up. So let's now say it's 8:35, the entire system is notified that, okay, to be on alert for hijacked aircraft acting strangely. Okay? That means, from what I understand about the timing, that as soon as United 175 started to do the dip-de-doo in the sky, the air traffic controller sitting there right there already would have been briefed, as would his area supervisor. And indeed, that is in fact testified to, because as soon as United 175 started to do a major course change and couldn't be raised, bang, okay, the guy said, I think I've got a hijacking here too. The only way that he could have come to that conclusion, Rob, was that he was pre-informed to look out for suspicious behaving aircraft.
Right.
Now, you wanted to make some other points?
Yeah, one of the points I want to talk about is one of the things that came through in the Vanity Fair issue, which is that NORAD can't do anything, ADC can't do anything unless they get latitudes or coordinates, okay, of the particular aircraft, and insinuating that the aircraft involved, all but American 77, were not radar identified all the way through their flights. Well, it's very clear now through testimony and documents given to us by the federal government that indeed, and testimony in front of 9/11 that was just kind of a little slip into there that Novi picked up, that the Boston Center actually tracked American 11 as a primary target after it lost its radar, after it lost its transponder, all the way to World Trade Center. It tracked it. Further information later indicates that the ADC radars, or NORAD radars, had it tracked, okay, because they could tell some possible altitudes about it. So American 11 was tracked all the way. NORAD admits, okay, that United 175 never really turned off its beacon, its transponder.
Right,
okay,
it just switched codes, right?
Okay, they may have switched codes or whatever, but the bottom line is that aircraft never lost real tracking. 93 is basically the same, okay, and the only one we lost is American 77. And people will come eventually in this project to understand, or into this movement to understand that when American 77 being the only aircraft that actually lost target, we lost its radar return, primary and secondary, in the mountains of, I think, West Virginia, that
right.
type of area, okay, it's going to really play a big role.
But right.
The bottom line of the story is all of those aircraft were always tracked all the time by the FAA Air Traffic Control Centers. And my position is if we really got the tapes from all of the sectors, we would find that the sector controllers would have reached out to the military,
sorry, the Air Defense Command guys and started doing the point outs. The reason we're not getting that information and the reason that it's locked down is because that puts the finger and responsibility right onto Rummy's military, because I maintain they knew where all of these aircraft were all of the time, with the one exception that once American 77's radar was lost west of West Virginia, out in Indianapolis, some center someplace, that that the radar target that emerged west of Dulles was never positively identified by anybody anywhere at any time as actually being American Airlines Flight 77.
Right. It was it's just identified as a target that hit the Pentagon.
That's correct.
Right.
Okay. But every other target was fundamentally tracked right into where it crashed. So when NORAD or anybody else says, well, we couldn't find them in this maze of whatever, excuse me, bottom line is you had some FAA personnel who tracked the aircraft, who were on the line pointing these aircraft out to you in reference to known geographical positions. Oh, that's why we don't have the tapes. That's why we don't have some of the flight data recorders that many people said have been found. This is why we don't have the evidence of that was carted away and trucked away from the bottom of the World Trade Center building collapse. It's evidence. It's gone. They
right.
needed to get rid of all of that evidence, because if they had a chance to evaluate it properly, okay, then it would be very clear who's behind this whole thing.
Right.
Additionally, this is why the civilian air traffic control personnel have been muted. Their voices have been completely shut down by the government. Rummy always had the ability to shut down any military person involved in it with needs, with NORAD, with any of their defense command situations, because they're military personnel and they have to follow orders. And any tapes, any recordings, any information that we get from them could be simply identified as being, it's just top secret type stuff. It's classified, okay? Now, the FAA tapes and whatever it might be isn't classified, but I believe that's why somebody told me the FBI or somebody else absconded with them, but one way or another, only certain portions of tapes throughout the entire events those days from all of the FAA facilities, only portions have been given. Not all controllers, all supervisors, all pilot communications, all intersector communications, and all interfacility communications have been allowed to be studied and analyzed. They're holding them because they tell the true story. Instead, what they did is they cherry-picked transmissions, communications, and statements made all along these four flights that were able to paint and write a story that the public would look at and say, ooh, wow, this really happened, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't factual. It was a story. And it did not tell anything other than what, okay, the high perps wanted the public to hear. They cherry-picked this information. And really, if there's another research into 9/11 and it's a really honest one, we need all the tapes and we need to be able to get testimony from all of the air traffic control staff, including the wide number of observers that were around at Boston Center, New York Center, Cleveland Center, and Indianapolis Center. There's always different people around with sets of eyes doing this, doing that. When these events occur, people are there. We need to have their testimony free and clear. Right now, it's all been shut down.
Right.
So the radar was good almost all the way, with the exception of American 77, and all of the voices, testimony, tapes, and whatever are not made available.
Right. Well,
about that.
That was excellent. Thank you.